You're listening to Buildopedia, your go-to podcast for everything you need to know about property. By covering the entire journey from buying your home through to design, building, selling, and everything in between, we'll help you fill in the blanks and bring your property vision to life.
Welcome to Buildopedia. Joining us today is a friend of Buildopedia, we call him, I guess, and regular guest, Matt Hayson from Cobden Hayson. Welcome, Matt.
Hi there. Good to be back, mate.
So we've had you on a few episodes and I thought it was time to check in and see where you think real estate's at, where you think the market's at, where you think the country's at. But you've got an interesting insight to start with, to share with us.
Sure.
That might answer some of that.
Yeah, look, for sure. This week I was fortunate enough to attend the Macquarie Bank function. Macquarie Bank, most people would know, around Australia, fifth largest bank in Australia, and pretty innovative around how they do banking. Certainly, though, the first bank to come into the real estate space and give us a lot of how we manage rents and things like that. So anyway, I spoke with the CEO yesterday who spoke with a smallish kind of group of people who I thought was quite inspiring in the sense of here in Australia, I think that we are in a very strange period economically across the globe and also politically across the globe. As everybody would know, it feels like we're all a bit fractured, certainly after COVID. It's done some strange things. And look, she came out and was very optimistic about the fortunes of Australia, and not just at a wealth level economically, but also, and I know this is a bit double-edged sword, and certainly we might get into this a little bit more about immigration and the cost of living and shortage of housing and things like that. But generally, the meetings that they're having with the people that can turn the dial are quite positive about them loosening up things about infrastructure and getting in more skilled migrants to help with some of this infrastructure as well. And just generally, how Australia is very much on the international map as this is, I know we kind of probably don't see it sometimes, but if you remove the veil a little bit, it's such a safe country. We still have very good medical. We've got pretty good roads, education, and obviously natural beauty and things like that. And it was good just to sit there and kind of sit back and go, yes, I know there's a lot of noise and screaming and ranting going on around at the moment, but it was just nice to kind of go, yeah, actually we are in a pretty fortunate place comparatively to what's happening around much of the world. And fortuitously, you know, we're probably, hopefully over the next decade or more, going to be in a place that's going to see, you know, considerable growth.
Yeah. And we've got a lot of problems, but like they are all first world problems, really.
They are.
For the majority of Australians, there are Australians that are very disadvantaged, to be fair, but for what a lot of the topics that are discussed, what a lot of the things that are front of mind are very much first world problems about seriously kind of, well, we're all living reasonably well. Some people are struggling, but we certainly don't have the sort of issues that a lot of countries have.
Yeah.
I don't think, like in the past, I've sensed a bit of, and maybe it's who you hang out with, right? But in the past, I've sensed a bit of pessimism about this or that. And I've said, and I won't mention any names, but one person in particular who's been predicting a downturn in housing for the last 30 years. And I'm like, well, one day you're going to be right. You know?
Well, the clock's right
If you say enough times, someday you'll be right because it's the nature of the beast. But I think at the moment, it's not pessimism, not optimism, it's just uncertainty. Like, we don't know, we're in some sort of a per capita recession, which nobody understands. And no one really knows where we are.
No, that's so true.
Or where we're going.
Yeah, no, that's right. But you're right. And interestingly, you know, they had a demographer also speak yesterday, a guy called Bernard Salt, I think he writes in The Australian, and he was very much up and about and excited about all the things and the data that's coming out through Australia. And one of the key things that was out of that about this, you know, this gentleman that you were mentioning about housing prices, he was thinking there's just no way in the world there's going to be a collapse in housing prices here in Australia because we're the 14th wealthiest country in the world, but of that, the list of the top 15, we're by far the smallest in terms of population. So per head, we're actually quite a wealthy country. But he said in terms of the immigration, and they foresee, I think it was by 2050, Sydney will have 9 million people. And I think they're even expecting it to be over 6.5 by 2030. And as you know, Matt, just the housing infrastructure that we need to build to accommodate that alone's going to be difficult to deliver. So yeah, that's going to underpin, I think, the value of Sydney property for quite some time.
And the problem is capacity, right? It's not funding as much. It's not, I mean, interest rates were creeping up and up. They feel like there's a bit of downward pressure, but capacity, you talk to everyone, it's capacity, 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 and labor. And we're not going to train our way out of it. I mean, I've got a long-held view that I've probably expressed on this podcast more times than I care to mention, but we're not bringing skilled people in. If you're running a corporation and you're under capacity, you're not going to start a training program. You're going to hire, right? That's the thing that I can't seem to break, that nobody's saying, and I don't know why, but we can't train our way out of a capacity crunch and a shortage of labor. Like, we need to hire, we need to bring people in who are skilled. We need to pay them. We need to get them here because we're capacity constrained. And so today's, I guess, the broader topic of today's discussion is how that capacity constraint, how that labor constraint and shortage of some materials, it's not a shortage in the sense of COVID shortage where you couldn't buy it, but certainly pressure on supply to a point where prices have spiked, you know, and timber particularly, prices went up ridiculously. You couldn't even get timber during COVID. And then they've come back a little bit, but they're still very high. But labor is the same. You know, it's very hard to bring in and manage labor costs from a construction perspective. And I'm curious as to what the interplay is between, it's got to a point where renovating in our neck of the woods, the inner west of Sydney, it's almost not viable in a lot of cases. So that's got to put some pressure, I don't know how long it takes, how that system works. Probably no one does really, but it's got to put some upward pressure on prices.
Yeah.
Particularly newly renovated things, right?
Oh, for sure. Yeah.
Are you seeing that?
Yeah, oh, big time. Yeah. So the knock-on effect of that is absolutely evident. And we've spoken about this ourselves before, that there's a lot of properties that had the design and the architecture, and then they get to the build cost and they, you know, end up with you, and they'll say, oh, look, we were hoping that, you know, and some of them here, they're not small renovations, as you know. Some people might be budgeting $1 million, maybe $1.5 million, maybe even $2 million. Whatever it is, they're then finding out that it's 50% to 100% more than their budget. And they're talking about, you know, so they get stuck with this $1 to $2 million disparity and then go, what do we do? So they naturally then move on to say, well, okay, well, if I bought a house for $3 million or $4 million and I was going to spend $1 or $2 million, well, what can I then go out and buy for $6 million that's already done and save myself the headache? So that knock-on effect is all the way down to $1.5 million, you know? So yeah, we're definitely seeing that knock-on impact. And but it is widely known now, I guess, that building costs have been at a heightened level for several years now. So, but still, and it's interesting, Matt, too, that some architects, what we're seeing, are still misquoting where building costs are sitting at rate per square meters. You know, there's still reputable architects that must be going through multiple builds are still telling their clients here in, you know, in the inner west of Sydney, oh, you know, budget around 5,000, 6,000 a square meter. But then they're obviously meeting you, Matt, and I don't know, what are you more, like eight, nine?
Nine.
Yeah, nine.
So what was six is nine. And I think I have to say that we're not immune from that. We really have just got our head around it. We've struggled to understand prices. And one of the things that has happened is that it's not a level playing field. It's very lumpy and it's not even. It's not evenly spread. It's not evenly distributed. So overall, when you look at the index of house across the construction industry since the start of COVID, prices are up 20 to 30%. But in the inner west, in our particular neighborhood, renovations are up 50 to 60%. And there's so even some quantity surveyors that we worked with couldn't work it out. And we ended up blowing some budgets and we ended up disappointing some clients. And we were just going, what the hell is going on? And I've probably for the last 6 to 12 months, I've been saying to clients, I don't understand what's happening. Like, we're not in tune with prices and we're not in tune with, for the first time in my career, it took me a while to get a handle on what's happening. And what's happening is that the economics of building has flipped a little bit, whereas once upon a time, if I had a house ready to go in concrete, I could save a bit of money and change it to timber and lightweight. And lightweight housing means smaller footings, less excavation, means smaller columns, smaller, like everything's lighter. At the moment, there is no saving from going to timber is expensive. There's pressure from a sustainability angle to build lighter more sustainably. There's pressure to, I guess, in our area, there's a lot of timber construction because that's what you get approved because it's a timber cottage. You add to it in timber, you're not going to start pouring concrete, right? You're going to follow and then you got to make it work to the, you got to get it approved as well. So you have to make it in keeping with heritage. So what that's done in our area is flipped it over. The other thing that's happened is if you think about the common site in the West and particularly Glebe, Balmain, Annandale, there's a lot of skinny, hard to access sites, and those builds are labor intensive and they're way more labor intensive than any other type of building that happens, right? So between those things, the timber and labor both have gone through the roof. Labor's, you know, depends on what you're getting, but timber can be three times the price of what it was a few years ago. Depends on the section, depends on what it is. It's way more expensive, and so is labor. So it's the perfect storm for the inner West because all of the buildings are hard to access and they're labor intensive. So that's what's happening. And we didn't, you know, we were still getting quantity surveyor and professional estimator advice to say, oh, yeah, it's gone up 30, maybe a bit more than 30. And it's like, no, it's actually 50 to 60, depending on the site and depending on the labor content. And bricklayers, and the funny thing that's happened, I had Matt Saunderson, who's a quantity surveyor who does a lot of architectural work on our podcast last episode. And yeah, he said bricklayers are they've gone from bottom of the heap to the top of the heap. You just can't get a bricklayer. So if you've got a building designed with bricks, designed with lots of timber, a lot of buildings in Balmain are exactly that. It's very expensive. And yes, it is fair to say that some architects deliberately underquote because it's a conundrum. Because if you tell the truth, you're going to miss out on the job.
Yeah,
potentially. There is no job. No one's going to do that. So you kind of, yeah. So I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but I think to be fair, it's been really tough to have a handle on price. But I think at some point it'll tip over because the common, or what Matt Saunderson said is that it makes most buildings unviable, makes most building at 9 grand a square meter, which is the old 6 grand a square meter, buildings people don't see that they'll get their money back. So
yeah, that's an interesting thing there. So, and this is where we see, so we come in at the end there where, you know, people are saying, oh, look, if I go and spend X amount of money to get this and this is what I'm going to create, is my house going to be worth, you know, so if it's $1 million, am I going to get $1 million back, or am I going to get 1.2, or I'm going to be 700? So we're having a few interesting cases where we're doing the numbers for them for the end product. And in some cases, even though the building cost has gone up, because we know the demand for that turnkey product when finished has also grown exponentially for the very reasons why. One, people don't want to build it. They think it's going to be too expensive. The time, the fighting with neighbors, the council issues, whatever it might be. There's a premium now getting front-loaded into all of that stuff, that type of product. We're not seeing that many that are finished because not that many people want to take on the risk of doing it, or it's an older renovation. But, and then again, you know, not a lot of people want to probably go to that level of effort and then just flip the house. Like, there's more people that are looking at doing it thinking, okay, well, is this our house for the next 5, 10, 15 years? But in some cases, and probably more so over the last 6 months, we're starting to say to people, look, if you go and do that, I get it, it's going to be expensive, but you will get your money back. And here's some examples of these high rent prestige turnkey homes, which have been finished, which have been getting that money. But quite often what we're finding is they're like, I'd still be happy to do it. I just can't afford to do it anymore. Yeah. You know, I had a budget of my financing construction cost was $1 million and it's coming at $2 million. I'd love to do it and it's the house of our dreams. We can't afford to do it.
Yeah, and there's always a risk. I mean, like you do see the developers that do well, you do see the people who do well, but it is a risk. Like you do take on a lot of risk in getting architecture commissioned and getting to a build, and there's a lot of things that can go pear-shaped. And some people are like, some people will just take that on readily, and other people, maybe people at different stages of their life as well, don't want to know about the downside risks and the hassle and the delay. And so it's an imperfect science, but I think it's, we've learned some lessons. Like I'm a lifelong learner, but I kind of backed myself to know a few things at times, and I've been humbled.
I think we all have. From the RBA trying to call interest rates won't be lifted till 2024 to pretty much every bank. I think, you know, it's one thing that the Macquarie guys brought up yesterday. They said at the beginning of the pandemic, CBA had forecast that property prices would plummet by 30%. Well, they went up by 30%. I think there's a lot of people being eating a bit of humble pie with forecasting what's going on over the last several years, economically at least.
And let's hone in a little bit on Sydney. We've had a motorway open. You know, we've had lots of angst and drama. I think it's calmed down. I kind of got the sense it would blow over because everyone that drove at that time needed? Do they need to? You know what? Some of them started catching a bus probably. I don't know. Others. But I'm talking, of course, of the WestConnex and the Rozelle interchange. And you'll find this funny, but it was in the news all over the country, right? And we had family ringing us from Adelaide to say, hey, are you all right? Because you live in Rozelle. You're in the news. Are you all right? You know, they were ready to send food.
I know. It was a funny time period, wasn't it? But there was a window there where it did explode, didn't it? I mean, I got stuck there where I was just trying to get out of Balmain just to get to the Iron Cove Bridge, which, as you know, is normally a two-minute exercise. Yeah. And that was 45 minutes, and I was like, hang on, this isn't good. I don't want to be doing this every day. And then, there's still some interesting things with several pinch points in, you know, the space of 200 metres, which don't make a lot of sense, but it certainly has calmed down. But I guess where you're going, has it impacted property at all? Is that maybe the question you were going to get to?
Last time we chatted, this was in the future. We got these things happening in the future that make things easier, make things better. I think the jury is out on the WestConnex, but certainly the Metro will add a lot of value. So we're kind of starting to see those things come to fruition. So in our neck of the woods, we've got not only the WestConnex open, but also the power station now.
Yeah.
Really changing a little bit the vibe of the area, the power station. Then there's a brewery now, there's a distillery and a cafe in close proximity. So it's changing the vibe a little bit. I've been to the brewery a few times. I haven't been to the distillery yet.
Well, there's a few things too. You know, the dry docks had a major overhaul. We got this Argentinian restaurant not far from our office, which has been getting a lot of hype. So, yeah, Balmain's definitely got its swagger on. Remove the infrastructure kind of issues around WestConnex and stuff like that. But, yeah, I think you're right. You can see everything getting put in place. And you would remember when they built the cross-city tunnel from the east to the Anzac Bridge and it was, this is a white elephant. Now it's heavily used and it absolutely has connected the east to the west. I mean, I use it all the time to go over to the football stadium and it's heavily used now. And it definitely opened up the corridor now and you've seen it, but for better or worse, the gentrification of our area now, which used to be all the pub crawls. And I'm talking specifically now more about Balmain and, you know, those things now have all been replaced by cafes and prams and kids and dogs. So, which, again, all of that infrastructure has broadened out this inner west region and, you know, it's certainly pulled people across from the North Shore and eastern suburbs and regions that had previously maybe a decade or more ago, maybe turned their nose up in some of these regions, but they're well and truly on the map. And if anything, they've become more, you know, certainly the Balmain Peninsula is probably one of the most desirable spots to live in Sydney now.
Yeah, look, and it has been for a while, but it was in this funny mode for a while where shops were closing and nothing was really, no development was really happening. Now it seems like, there are a few things happening. I wonder what the interplay between the confidence in terms of, you know, having those things that were work sites for such a long time finally opening, and what impact does having a biennale at your doorstep have, I guess?
Yeah, I think it's just all of these wonderful things which are like reinforcing the value of being in this area and all the amazing things which are accessible to us, all the residents that are living here as well. So, yeah, it's just reinforces what a great place it is. It reinforces that there's always events going on that are, you know, the banale type going on now with the power station. I mean, it's a world event in some respects. So I think, look, I would have thought it's all very positive.
It's the biennale, not the banale.
The biennale.
Yeah, banale.
That's it. Banale. Biennale. Good.
The banale is a whole different thing.
Good. Excellent.
But yeah, and I guess then we're checking in as well. Metro's happening, and you know, the government pretended they were going to scrap it, but of course they were never going to scrap it. And White Bay, I mean, White Bay is going to change again, going to flip the area on its head unimaginably. So I kind of think between all of those things, I mean, there's still the metro is still 8 years away, right? So still a lot of tunneling to do.
Yeah,
but yeah, how is that factoring into decisions people are making about coming here and spending money in their building?
A lot of people certainly the corridors around the inner west, which have been most impacted about it. So a lot of those sellers have held on to this is coming. For probably a decade, you know, for some, even WestConnex and things like that. Now that a lot of these projects are starting to be delivered, particularly that one, it's definitely calmed things down. You know, certainly if you're across on the Roselle side around Lilyfield Road now, where you're starting to see all the parks open up now, which previously for what, you know, how long would it be? 10 years? Well, 8 to 10 years where it was just a desolate place of work trucks and everything like that. So now all of a sudden this amazing. There's a cricket field down there, beautiful walks. There's kids, you know, play areas and what have you. So to even walk or drive past that now is quite actually amazing to think, wow, they've finally delivered on this project. So, yeah, they're all stepping stones to reinforcing why this is, particularly the inner west, I guess we'll talk about now, is such an excellent place to be living, particularly if you're going to be CBD based work-wise. And it offers a lifestyle here that you would know that feels very community-based and driven, but yet you're looking at the CBD and what would feel like a lot of work, but it just definitely doesn't have that vibe in these regions.
And in terms of the market generally, I mean, it does feel like, I don't look at every sale. I don't look at a lot of things. I do, obviously, we do inspections for our customers and we work in with some of the agents in the inner west. But it feels like renovators being a renovator is in a description of a property rather than a person who renovates. Those renovators' delights seem good value at the moment.
No question. Yeah. So we've got a three speed market. So which I mentioned earlier, your turnkey properties are the sought after ones. Minimum time, people are time poor, it's ready to move in, just bring your furniture. They're doing particularly well and buyers are probably focused on those for all the things we've mentioned, from cost to get there and pressures and that type of thing. There was a stage probably pre-COVID and when there was in the height of all the renovation shows where people thought, oh, I can buy one of these fixer-upper renovators and I can turn this into a mansion in, you know, that several weeks, which everybody knew was not possible. But the reality of building costs, time is really surfaced now. And as a result of that, those properties that do require that attention and extra work and effort, they're probably representing they're still expensive, but they're much better value and in less demand than, say, the more finished product.
Yeah, because at some point, it really felt like a home ready to renovate, a renovator's delight, got a premium price.
Oh, big time. It was crazy. Yeah. We would sell in a weekend a renovated version and then the unrenovated version, same street, same aspects, same everything, same offering. And there was virtually no differential on price. Like there might have been 100K and was like, well, why wouldn't you? But people almost had a preference. I don't like their renovation. I want to do it my way and I reckon I can do it better and cheap, and I'll get a better outcome than what was on offer that was renovated. They found out the hard way that it wasn't that easy, but it was. That was kind of what we saw. It was the differential on values was almost non-existent.
Yeah, but it seems to have flipped around now. So I think that, and Matt Saunderson, very respected QS, but I don't know, I was a bit skeptical when he said that speculative development and renovate is, it's just not viable. And I'm like, well, I guess you could talk for weeks about what that means and what the context of the property and everything about the property that you know, that statement doesn't cover, and the potential and the lack of potential. But I think the market steadies itself a lot. And I think that actually he was right 6 months ago, maybe, but I think at the moment it's sort of back on a little bit. Like you can turn, if you make good decisions, if you make smart decisions, you can unlock value and you can get a return. Just because of that renovator's delight premium doesn't apply anymore. So you get a discount to the market for buying something that's hard to deal with. And then, yes, you pay a lot more for the build cost, but in the end, there's a demand for that property. If you get it right.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm wondering, my thinking on it is just new property. Don't worry about the bells and whistles. Like, I don't think anyone will care whether you have any wine fridges or a cellar. I think there'll be just a demand for well put together functional properties that are ready to live in and live well in. And I don't think people need saunas and, you know, special.
No,
they just want something finished, livable.
Good layout. Good colour palette. And that's where you're clever, I would have thought, is, and I reckon you've hit the nail on the head, is finding that balance between the look and feel probably has a bit of wow factor, but you've not gone ostentatious with the fixtures, fittings, and you don't need a lot of these things. Like, you don't need solar panels everywhere and saunas, to your point, or, you know, an extravagantly big bathroom with double jewel shower. You don't need all of that. As long as the flow, the feel, the colour palette, and it's a reasonable level of standard quality is quite good. You might say, and you're probably clever with this, where you spend a bit of money on like the kitchen area or where you might deem to be the hub of the home or where the energy and most people will congregate, where you kind of go, right, well, let's make sure that pops, but everything else can be quite toned down as long as it works. It's the right size, right flow. That way, as you rightly say, buyers, as sophisticated as they are, they don't pull it apart and go, oh, why didn't they use this particular? I wanted this particular Carrara marble and they've used this different stone. I mean, they don't go in. Like, it's 1 in 100 that might have that vision.
Oh, look, sometimes they won't remember what the stone was. They just love the feel of it, you know.
Yeah.
And that's what we try and package up every day of the week, is quality, the good feeling you get when everything feels like it's in the right place and the lighting's good and everything just feels right. That's the return on investment, getting the balance right, or the greatest return on investment. But I'm wondering where, so the market, I mean, I had a chat to your mate Danny Cobden yesterday, because I was helping one of his buyers with some advice, but he did say that there's properties going for ridiculous prices at the moment. Is that just in the high spec sort of upper end of the market? Is it across the board? What are we seeing?
So market's really interesting, and this is a Sydney-wide thing where we've seen, and again, this has probably really been surfaced and magnified since COVID, where the have and have-nots, the divide's been getting wider, and that prestige end of the market has continued to accelerate to a point where there just doesn't seem to be any end in sight at the moment. So already I'm just talking more specifically now in a core market that we work within, Balmain. I know Danny would be up and about, you know, one that he sold in Birchgrove for 7.5. Guide was, you know, just a bit over upper sixes. One just sold on the waterfront for just over 15 million. So there's some money around in that prestige market. A lot of people looking to upgrade and get those larger lifestyle family homes. And interestingly, what we're seeing is maybe a bit of a demographic shift, in the sense of people are very much aware now that they're in their homes a lot more. So you're Netflixing at home, you're working from home, you're doing a lot of you can get your food delivered to home, you don't have to go out as much. So if you want to live that life and you don't want to be out on the road, like doing all of these, your home is actually becoming quite essential. So extra spaces, I know a lot of people are drawing into their, you know, a workroom now, like a Zoom room or a workroom is becoming quite important for a lot of people. A cinema or /TV/ where I'm going to watch Netflix and chill with friends and or whatever streaming service you use. These are becoming things where homes now. So that's why these larger homes in each and every suburb across Sydney are becoming in a much higher and a demand. And there is a financial appetite to even acquire those. So maybe there's an extra premium laid onto those because people are aware now that, hang on, I need this extra room. I want my kids to come with their friends and we need space for them. And I work from home now. In fact, I work from home, so does my wife. And, you know, she needs a room, I need a room. So there's all of these things which are changing over the last several years, which again, I know a lot of companies are calling their staff to come back into the offices to work from the office, but it seems like that's definitely the straws, you know, COVID broke that. And it's now become certainly a part of the employment routine and conversation now that, you know, there's a portion of your time that you're going to be working from home.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Yeah, so look, everyone's aspiration now, like there's not many design briefs that don't have some sort of a home office. It was, yeah, 1 in 10 before COVID.
Yeah.
Now it's pretty much 9 out of 10. There's some sort of a zone for work. So,
for sure.
Yeah, we're seeing that. But, Matt, what about the bottom, like the rest of the market?
Of the market.
Like we've talked about the premium end of the market, the prestige, as you call it.
Where's everybody else sitting? Yeah, for sure. And I think this is really interesting for your client, like for your listeners to be aware of. What you're reading in the media is about auction clearance rates and everything like that. Again, it's quite misleading because they get their Saturday data from CoreLogic, and you'll often hear auction clearance rate hits 70%. And then if you read within the print, later in the week it'll be cut down to 62 or 65 or whatever it might be. Even that number's incorrect. So SQM Research, I might have mentioned this on the previous podcast with you, SQM Research by Louis Christopher's the most accurate auction data. So your rest of your market is going through what I would suggest is a more challenging period and an arm wrestle between buyers where they see value and where sellers see value. So sellers, it's very easy to come to market and get hooked on the media narrative or the one story that, oh, this auction sold for $600,000 above reserve and there was that they're the anomalies, right? And the media goes searching those out each and every week to go, oh, who's got the hot auction? Let's report on that. And that's what people kind of gravitate to. The rest of the market is far more balanced. When you really look at the auction, the true auction clearance rate since over the last 4 weeks, it's been pegged between 50 and 55%. Now, whenever we see that for the rest of the market, that would mean that there's actually probably downward pressure on certain property prices. And that's probably for those properties which have the poor floor plan, wrong aspect, busy road, doesn't have parking, whatever it might be. And they're the things where for a buyer, they're going to have to demonstrate excellent value in order to get engagement. So I almost see it as the A-grade stuff property in any market, be it 2 million to 10 million, is the really good quality property. It's in the best street, right aspect. It's what when somebody walks through, they know the flow, the feel, and everything's right. And that's what everybody will gravitate to. It doesn't matter. And that's what's driving the property market forward at the moment. That's why we're seeing very, very modest, almost non-existent, but very modest price gains each and every month in Sydney over the course of this year. Everything below that's your B-grade stuff, which still you can see, you can unlock value, which you mentioned. It's kind of okay. It's still in a reasonable street. You can see how you can unlock value. The buyers are kind of gravitating to those as well, but they're far more conscious about what they pick the property up. So most of those properties are selling prior to auction. And then you've got your C-grade stuff, which is that more challenging stuff. And I would suggest right now that there is downward pressure on that particular category of property. So that's kind of an overview of the market. And that's broadly what's happening, not just in Sydney. When I talk to agents, you know, it's from Queensland to Canberra to, you know, Melbourne, everyone's pretty much saying it's that same pattern everywhere.
And what's going to happen next is the
yeah. Well, here we go. Let's have a test, right? So there's a lot of big, strong narratives around the interest rates, right? And the RBA met yesterday and said, look, they're going to be on pause. But one thing that they dropped out of their conversation is at their last meeting, they said that we're leaving the door open that we could, in fact, increase rates again. And that spooked people. It was like, oh, gee, we're not out of the woods yet. They've dropped that this year and said, look, we're leaving it open that they could go up or down. So it's only these little nuances of conversation which change. CBA are factoring in that rates will go down from September 3 times. Most of the banks are aligned September, October, November that there will be a cut. Most of the banks. So that's probably the key driver, as you would know, it's sentiment driven. So once that kind of comes closer and closer to happening, I think we'll probably find that the market will respond to that and buyers will feel a little bit more confident. I personally, outside of the very best property that's available in any market across Australia right now, I personally can't see major price shifts in terms of positivity through the course of this year. Everywhere we look, everybody we talk to, doesn't matter what type of business, is generally saying that financially everything feels pretty pushed. And therefore, they're very conscious about even everything from groceries to fuel to holidays to buying a house to buying clothes. Everybody's very conscious about what they're spending, except for that, you know, rarefied air of maybe, you know, 1% of the country. So, yeah, it feels to me as though it's going to be a fairly stable year. But with the thought that interest rates are coming down, that will help, you know, moderate or underpin any sense that there'd be price declines.
Yeah, I've had my head in the sand about that. And I'll tell you why. And it maybe I'm telling too much about myself, but I think my interest rates unlock in November. I've been too scared to check what they actually are.
Oh,
what
God.
They might be.
Yeah, yeah. So when you came off a fixed to, into.
I fixed. I actually fixed prior to COVID, I think. And I'm thinking, surely they can't go down. And if they go down, it won't be much. And I'm too scared to even look at what.
Where it's jumped to. Yeah.
Well, in November, I'm going to have to come to terms with it, but I've still got 6 months.
Yeah, yeah. Well, by that stage, we might be on the slide down by that stage again. So, yeah.
But, I've literally been too nervous to check. But, you know, look, it'll be whatever it is, and I'll have to make it work.
You've got through better than most that were sitting on, you know, a lot of people that were on the variables and have gone from, you know, 2.2% to 6.5%, you know. So,
yeah, I could have fixed like a year after I did and been sitting even better, but, you know, that's fine. Like, you can't predict it. But I guess I just wanted that stability for a time and, you know, got away with it.
The other difficult thing for borrowers right now is interestingly on that, is they're still getting their financial data done and approvals done with the 3-point buffer on top of the current rate.
Yeah.
So in talking to a lot of the buyers that, you know, we're meeting each and every weekend, they're saying most of my finance is being assessed on 9 to 9.5%, which with a lot of the numbers that people are paying for properties, it's pretty heavy.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, that's tough to fund anything. Well, it's a reality check that actually no one really knows. No one really predicts. And you could see interest rate rise of that magnitude. Unlikely, but it can happen. Economics, I mean, I did a postgraduate course in macroeconomics and micro, like it was an economics graduate certificate. Microeconomics made a lot of sense. Macroeconomics made no sense whatsoever.
Yeah. Yes,
it literally, for someone who's got a science brain and for anyone who's got a logical brain, it's like, really? So you've got a formula and that works until it stops working. So then you adjust the formula. That's macroeconomics. It's things work, models work until they don't.
And
it's all probability, and it's a complex system that no one really has a handle on. But
No. Well, it turns out people can't predict the future, Matt, which is probably a good thing.
Crazy. In this day and age.
Yeah, I know. Well, it's funny, actually, Shamara, who's the CEO of Macquarie Bank, she said, somebody asked, do you want to throw your hat in the ring and let us know what you think will happen with cash rates later this year? And she said, look, one thing I say about economists is even they get the past wrong. So she just said, look, I'll leave that to somebody else to forecast the future. We make decisions on the today.
Oh, look, if you forecast enough times, eventually you get something right.
That's right. Yeah.
So you're not seeing any doom and gloom.
Really. Yeah. Well, look, what we're seeing is it's still healthy numbers of buyer inquiry, lots of people out inquisitive about a property, you know, talking with our brokers and Shore Financial and other lenders of, you know, they're still saying there's still a pretty good pipeline of people coming through the system, albeit they're under this process of being measured against 9% cash rate. There's still people inquiring. And the other interesting thing is, which I think we're going to back in for the next 10 years plus, is there's this incredible transfer of wealth as the baby boomers start to move through the system. So even the data is, there's 240 billion plus in baby boomer assets, which need to be handed down to families or wherever that money goes over the next 10 years. So there's
a lot of cruises.
There's a lot of money around. Where it ends up, I don't know. But yeah, that's the next decade here. So no, I don't see any doom and gloom.
Yeah. And any parting words to round up? You're seeing the top of the market is quite robust, to say the least. And
for sure.
Really showing a gap. You know, that gap in wealth is definitely there in what you're seeing day to day.
Well, one thing, Matt, we haven't touched on, just quickly to sum it up too, is the rental market is incredibly tight. Like the tight, like we've got, we manage 4,000 properties across our group, which is a lot. So just between Balmain and Annandale offices, we've got 2,500 managements. We're only opening six properties this Saturday. Six.
Yeah, so, right.
You know, so you've seen 14% rent growth in 12 months, but it's also the availability. So again, they try to bring in some measures about, no, you can't have renters bidding for, overbidding for property, but you know, sadly, that's still occurring. It's not being propagated by agents anymore, but people, you know, through desperate for accommodation are coming and saying, I know you're asking $1,000 a week. I'll give you $1,200 just to get a property. So that's an interesting space, which is pretty tough. And I find it quite sad because even for, you know, you need all stretches of demographics in every area. You know, somebody's got to work in cafes and somebody's got to do all this stuff. But, you know, a lot of these suburbs are turning into, it's only for the wealthy. So, you know, I don't know where employment's going to be coming in a lot of these places sometimes. And you're probably seeing it in skilled workers, you know. And
oh, yeah. One of my site managers, you know, was paying $700 or $800 for a small apartment. I don't remember where exactly, somewhere in the east or maybe around Botany or somewhere. And then for $500 on the Central Coast, he's got a waterfront, like a little thing, but, you know, he's got a house with a yard. And he couldn't be happier.
Yeah.
Yeah, it moves people out and forces them to commute, I guess.
Yeah.
I'm hoping that he's very good. I'm hoping he continues to commute. But that's tough to argue with. I'm like, why are you going over there? And it's like, well, oh, okay, well, yeah, you get a whole house. It's a little house, but 500, like that disparity, a whole house for $500 with a little jetty on a little, you know.
Yeah, beautiful.
Oh,
yeah.
No. Not Sydney Harbour waterfront, but nonetheless, it's not a bad, it looks like a lovely spot. And in Sydney, it's a bedroom.
A studio, yeah.
Where. So, yeah, absolutely. And that's not going to get any better. Like,
there's
no pathway to get it better because of that inherent capacity constraint. Yeah. So, look, I don't know. I don't know where that's heading. It's not heading anywhere good. It's going to make Sydney less and less livable. So, you know, in a funny way, we're, you know, because we're talking about the WestConnex. I mean, a lot of cities are demolishing freeways and building a lot of livability and low-cost housing. We're going back into the dark ages somewhat with a lot of road construction and very little in terms of livability. So I don't know. I think at some point you've got to pay the piper, and it's going to continue to be hard. So, yeah, because it's a continual, right? People who can't find affordable accommodation can't afford to live here and work here. And that means it's harder to get things built for them to live in. So you're kind of in this flywheel of this negative flywheel to some extent. So
yeah,
I don't know. Maybe that's a gloomy bit that people forget about, and it is tough to find somewhere to. And if you're lucky enough to own your property, you're probably doing well. And yeah, I think the old the adage in Sydney, or the advice in Sydney, is just get in the door, get something, just buy something.
Yeah.
Little, but own it, and it's all, you know, and stretch. Like that's the advice. And in our own ways, like someone said, I don't know who, that wealthier people have just got bigger problems, you know.
Yeah.
but if you've accumulated a bit of wealth, chances are you've stretched at some point.
Well, you've had to take risks. Yeah,
definitely. So yeah, top end of the market's looking robust. Rent's looking miserable if you're trying to rent.
Yeah, rents are super tight. Your B-grade stuff's pretty good, but you've got to be very sensible as a seller. You can't be overly aggressive and ambitious on your price. You need to very much listen to market feedback. If you've got those properties which you're on or offload and you are on a busy road, or it doesn't have the right floor plan and you know it needs a big reno or something like that, you're just going to have to come in at a very sharp price to get your engagement and get sold. Good news is there's buyers out there. There's plenty of activity, but buyers are very much conscious and price sensitive about that. So if you align all that stuff, it's the old adage, you'll have a good successful sale. But if you're a bit greedy, you'll find yourself hanging around on the market for a while.
Sounds great. And Matt, thanks so much.
Pleasure.
So Matt Hayson, principal at Cobden Hayson. one of the leading, if not the, or I better not say the leading, because I'm, a, you know, I don't want to piss people off.
We're up there.
I'll say one of the leading, just for, to be politically sensible.
Yep.
But yeah, certainly regular guest, and very much welcome you back, and we'll chat to you very soon. Thanks.
Sounds great, Matt. No problem.
All right.
So much. See you.
Cheers. Thanks.
You've been listening to Buildapedia. Please remember to like us and share our episode with your friends. We'd love your comments and suggestions. And we have a new website, buildapedia.au, where you can get in touch or leave a question and check out our blog.